not the third switch. Run, I say! Run!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from high atop the Truth in Broadcasting building in beautiful Southwest Florida. Beautiful sandy beaches and blue skies here today. Ah, yes, another day in paradise. Hope it's nice where you are as well. Got a lot for you today on this program. I mean a lot. We're talking about many things. I posted on a couple different websites here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Zakari story today. We're not going to spend the whole show on it, certainly. It doesn't merit that, but we will talk about that. And, maybe a little bit more about Ann Coulter. How about the story about the privately funded trips for our Congress critters? Oh, my God. These boys and girls are, well, they're playing a little too hard, if you ask me. And lots of things to talk about. Of course, we had the estate tax was not repealed yesterday. And what else we got? Oh, Kenny Blackwell up in Ohio. The Ohio Dems are calling for him to step down as Secretary of State and not preside over his own election attempt. Now, I don't know if that's been done anywhere else around the country, but it seems to me that if you are in charge of making sure the election is fair and you are running, it seems to me if you had any ethics whatsoever, which he doesn't, you would drop out of the, you know, you drop out of the Secretary of State. You would recuse yourself from that situation for a while. But knowing Kenny Blackwell, unless there's a lot of pressure put on him, he probably won't do that. What else here today? Oh, I made myself a little note. I caught Mr. Limbaugh in a huge lie today. A huge lie. I wonder if anybody else caught it. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Also heard Mr. Drug Junkie Limbaugh saying that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and perhaps Bill Clinton and Jack Murtha and John Kerry would probably all be attending Zarqawi's funeral. You know, that Limbaugh's a real son of a bitch. You know, he really is. There's a guy right there that if you're driving down the bus, driving a bus down the street over in Highway 1 in Palm Beach over where he lives, he wouldn't want to step out in front of the bus if I was driving it. I mean, the guy is just, what a whore. I mean, I realize he's good at what he does. He makes $30 million a year and all that stuff. But to tell the fat lie he did today and then say that John Kerry and Murtha and Clinton and all them would probably be attending Zarqawi's funeral. What a, well. Anyway, we would love to have you give us a call today. Don't get me started on that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And we hope you'll come to the show today and be entertained a little bit, perhaps informed a little bit, maybe even educated a little bit, particularly those of you who are listening maybe for the first time, who maybe one of your neighbors, one of your right-wing neighbors, and you're on the right, you're a Republican. Maybe one of your neighbors said, oh, God, you got to tune in and listen to this crazy loon on the left. If you listen and you listen long enough, sooner or later, we'll persuade you to listen to reason. We'll persuade you that you're not going to get your news from Fox News. You're not going to get it from Newsmax. You're not going to get it from Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh. If you want the truth, you will come right here, and we'll give you the truth every single day. Totally the truth. That's just what we're going to serve up to you every day. And you can check it out, as we've invited many times. If you think we've told a big old fat lie on this show, you give us a call and you prove it, okay? Haven't had anybody take us up on that, ever. So, anyway, if we think something's a rumor, we'll say it's a rumor. If it's just a small talk, we'll say that. But if we present it as fact, then it is a fact. And that's just how it is. Well, I already invited you to call, and I hope you will. It's Friday. Friday is a day that we usually try and mix it up on here, as you know, and as I've mentioned before, it's no secret. It's a trade secret, actually, that Friday's the slowest day of the week in talk radio. And that's why so many times a lot of the hosts take off on Friday. But I'm here. I'm leaving Sunday, though, getting on that big silver bird and heading to Washington, D.C. for the Take Back America conference. And we're going to be there on Radio Row on Monday and Tuesday at our regular time from 3 to 5. We'll have some great guests for you. I don't have the complete list yet. We're going to have Eric Alderman for one, and Dave Sirota, and I forget who else. We've got our good friend in Washington, D.C., Candy Stroud, has lined us up with some very good guests and people you'll be interested in. Hey, if you weren't interested in them, we wouldn't have them on the program. How about our guy yesterday, Brian? Didn't he do a great job? My, oh, my. And we'll talk about him a little later in the program again as well. Okay, now the clock is turning. We've had a full 24 hours and more to take a good look at the Zakawi story. It's been a nonstop news item from the moment it was announced. You know that. Every media medium is screaming it from the rooftops. That's their job, I guess, to trumpet the news, sometimes to make it a whole lot more than it is. You know that. Well, I've got a big problem with the whole thing. I really do, and you knew I would. It's pure, unadulterated Republican propaganda. Probably the biggest snow job since the run-up to the Bush War. And let me explain. Yes, the guy's dead. God save the Queen, he's dead. How he died, we'll discuss later on. But for now, let's just look at what's going on in Washington with right-wing-controlled news business. And make no mistake about it, it is the right-wing-controlled news business. They've headed for that aim over the last 30 years, and they have achieved it. And the late, great Lee Atwater admitted before he died, and you've heard me say it many times, the great propagandist, Republican propagandist, Lee Atwater, said before he died, admitted that he made up the liberal media myth and knew that they controlled the media on the right. So this whole story is being glorified as a huge tactical victory over the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. I've heard the phrase, cut the head off the snake. You've heard that over and over. I heard it 100 times since yesterday morning, and that's fine. Perhaps it's a good analogy. The only problem is it wasn't the right snake. This was a snake who really, as far as leadership in Al-Qaeda, was no longer able to bite people. This was a snake who'd been put in the back room by the rest of the snakes. The fact is that Zarqawi was no longer the big fish. This killing amounted to nothing more than revenge. Fine, revenge is all right in this case, I suppose. I've engaged in it myself a couple of times, but to treat this as though they had killed Hitler in the middle of World War II is nothing more than a trip to fantasy land. Surely by now, most of my audience knows that Zarqawi no longer was in control of Al-Qaeda operations in Iraq. He'd been relegated to ex-leader more than a couple of months ago. And we reported that 2 months ago when we heard it from our Middle East sources, but no one paid the slightest bit of attention. Zarqawi is old news. Old news. The rest of his playmates didn't like the way he was running the show. They didn't like the fact that he was doing his best to start a civil war, which, by the way, he did succeed in doing. They only wanted to fight the Americans, not their fellow Iraqis, but Zarqawi wanted to do it differently. The rest of them felt they could settle their sectarian problem later. I mean, after all, they've been fighting about it for, what, 700 years or more? They could always come back to spilling each other's blood after they defeated the great Satan in the United States. So they get a new leader named Baghdadi. He's running the show now and has been for several months, and as it turned out, the new guy is just as brutal as was Zarqawi. Actually, if you take a close look at it and look at the stats, the level of violence in Iraq has actually stepped up considerably since he took control. And one might do well to remember that there are two factions to the insurgency. No one talks about that in the conservative-controlled news. Two factions in the insurgency. You've got the Al-Qaeda faction, who wants to cause as much trouble for everybody as possible so that the others will rise up and join them in throwing out the Americans from the entire Middle East. And then you have the plain old Iraqis who hate the fact that they're being occupied by a foreign power, a bunch of godless infidels in their mind, and they're fighting like hell to throw the Americans out. It's really that simple. It's the second group that doesn't get any press. The Bush propaganda machine would have you forget these guys even exist. They want us to forget they exist because just maybe these guys have a point. Let me ask you a question. All you right-wingers that are listening that send the email but never want to have the courage to call, if some other country, and there was a movie about this a long time ago, maybe 20 years ago, about the Russians taking over America. If some other country came marching down the main street of your town, driving tanks and blowing hell out of everything in sight and indiscriminately killing your neighbors and torturing some of them, what would you do? I know what I would do. I'd take to the streets, the alley, the bushes, if you will. I'd plan and I'd plot to throw these intruders into my sovereign nation right out the door. I'd want their hides, and so would millions of my fellow countrymen. Who could blame them for feeling that way? I don't. So this faction is ignored by the press and by the Bush administration. In fact, the Bush administration refuses to admit that they even exist. The Bush administration would have you believe that the entire Iraqi population thinks George Bush is the God of gods. He is their savior, along with Donnie Rumsfeld, too. The Bush administration would have you believe that the Iraqi people are oh so happy to have the Americans there. I saw a poll just the other day where 47% of the Iraqis don't blame anybody for attacking Americans. That's not so damn welcome in that country, now is it? Now, since it was their idea to start this whole nefarious plan in the first place, they want to put the best possible face on it. They want it to seem like it's the good guys against the bad guys. The Americans are wearing the white hats, and the Iraqis are wearing the big black hats, you know, like in the old cowboy movies. Well, nobody talks about regular guy Joe Iraqi, who is doing nothing more than defending his home from American imperialists. And our kids are suffering on account of it. You see these people, they've got long memories. They remember the things Western countries have done to them in the past, and they will not forget it. Believe me, the United States of America is not in this war for any altruistic reasons. I think most of you have figured that out by now. We are in it for our benefit. We're in it to protect the interest of the United States and for no other reason. We want a permanent presence in the oil fields that can't be denied. We're there to stay, and the Iraqis know it. These are not stupid people. These are not third world people. These are highly educated, highly intelligent people. They know why we're there. So we catch this guy Zarqawi, who was he was an American invention in the very first place. Remember now that Colin Powell claimed Zarqawi was the link between Saddam and bin Laden. Of course, that was a claim that turned out to be patently false, like most of the other claims made concerning the run-up to war. And all of a sudden, ding-dong, the witch is dead. The whole country celebrating like it was the 4th of July. Zarqawi's dead. Shouted from the rooftop, the only trouble is that it's not going to make a damn bit of difference whether he is dead or not. Not one bit. He was no longer a major player, and people familiar with the situation know that very, very well. The real crime in all of this is the fact that once again, the Bush administration has decided for their own self-serving reasons to propagandize the American public for their own political gain. They're in political trouble, and they're going to take the ball and run with it on this one. The only thing is, we found them out. We've been saying these guys will do anything to hold on to power, and this is but one more chapter in that sorry book of theirs. The White House and the Pentagon has been in full battle mode since the news was received of Zarqawi's death. They've sent a couple of busloads of their best talking heads out to the media to beat the drums on the glorious victory for George W. Bush in his own private personal war. Wonderful. Marvelous. God bless America. George Bush has killed Zarqawi. I'm surprised there's not a picture of him standing with one foot up on Zarqawi's body and holding a shotgun. I'm really surprised we haven't done, you know, they probably considered it. The headline should read, and this is what every paper and every radio and TV news story should say, this is, should be the headline, former Al-Qaeda leader killed. He used to be an important guy, but when we finally got him, he was almost meaningless to the Al-Qaeda movement. But, and you knew I was coming to that, the Bush boy, badly in need of any little tiny morsel of good news for him politically and the Republicans, latched on to this like it was the greatest, most important victory for the military since Omaha Beach. You would think so, wouldn't you? But listening to their talking heads, one would draw the conclusion that we did indeed cut the head off of a big snake, and the rest of that snake would wither and die very soon. Limbaugh, Hannity, Ingram, Bortz, O'Reilly, Republican politicians afraid of losing their seats in the fall election. The whole choir of neocons are out there singing the hallelujah chorus of propaganda to the gullible American people. And that's another thing. Now all the little neocons sitting at home watching Hannity and Combs and Fox will be crowing. And you've heard it from your friends and neighbors. See, we really are winning the war. I told you so. We got Zarqawi. Victory is ours. Or certainly not far away. This proves that George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld have been on the right track all along. Stay the course, yes, sir, by God. And this proves that staying the course is the right course. Oh, man. The problem is, all of that's just plain old BS. It's just not true. We are not in one bit better shape today than we were 2 days ago. And if in a couple of weeks all the violence stops, I will sit right here and eat my words. But somehow I think I'm not going to have to do that. We've seen these guys cry wolf how many times now? We captured Saddam, the violence will stop. We got Hussein and Qusay. Now we'll have some peace. We killed Zarqawi how many times now? And now it'll be okay. And keep this in mind as well. Bushy boy himself, knowing that he'll be quoted from now ad infinitum, is measuring what he is saying. Well, you know, we got Zarqawi, but there might be some violence yet, and this isn't going to end it and everything, but we got Zarqawi, and don't forget, we got Zarqawi. There still might be some killing, but we got Zarqawi, we got Zarqawi. 9-11, 9-11, 9-11. That's what Bush is saying. But the ploy by the right-wing media and the right-wing talking heads, the 100 or so of them in the White House, is to send everybody else out. See, Bush is the general. They send the foot soldiers out to the TV shows and the radio shows. And their writers, the Jonah Goldbergs and all, they send the foot soldiers out to do the dirty work and tell the lies. Yeah, this is great. By God, the war's going to end now and blah, 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 blah. But Bush himself is being very, very measured on this. That's how it works. What do they call it? Plausible deniability? Just don't forget where this news is coming from and why. If you always ask the question, why, after hearing these guys crow about their so-called victories, you'll be a whole lot better off, believe me. You always will. I've got a lot of questions about Zarqawi. And like I said, we're not going to spend the whole show on that today. It's almost getting to be old news. Although, I believe there is probably one more major story in it yet. And we'll see. We'll see. The cynic in me tells me that there's a little bit missing to this story. And I know some of you feel the same way. Um, So now, you know, Zarqawi's out of the way. We got to go out and capture bin Laden now, right? Will that make any difference if they do get him? Did it help when they captured Hussein, and Saddam Hussein, and now Zarqawi got him killed? Did any of that help? Well, they didn't capture Hussein Kusay. Was that their names, Hussein Kuday? Whatever their names were. A couple of nasty boys. Used to like to feed people to tigers and so forth. Not the normal kids down the block, that's for sure. And now they've killed the Zarqawi character. You know, the cold hard truth is that it's not going to do a bit of good to have killed Zarqawi. And I think everybody with any brains knows that. Oh, sure, it's good that a guy like that's no longer able to cause problems. But there are, and we know this, there are 1,000 more where he came from. Just like cockroaches, ready and willing to take his place. In fact, somebody already has taken his place a couple of months ago. But as you know, the threat of death is no deterrent to these people. And how do you fight somebody to which, you know, they're not afraid to die? In fact, they welcome it. So in the long term, after all the partying and the political posturing is over with concerning Zarqawi's death, what will be the result of killing him? Other than plain old vengeance, I don't see any benefit whatsoever to have killed him. So I'm wondering why, and this is just me, I'm just saying, why didn't they take him alive? If they knew precisely where he was, why didn't they just move in a bunch of troops and take him alive? Wouldn't he have been far more valuable to our military alive than dead? We're talking about this treasure trove of information we got. Wouldn't it have been better to have him and those people alive? You know, General Casey reports that there was no thought whatsoever of taking him alive. They never even considered it, he said. I think it would have been a much better propaganda tool for the Bush boys to have been able to parade him around for a while and show those who want to follow in his footstep that this martyrdom they want so bad just might not be available to them. And instead, they'll get to spend the rest of their lives in a cage. Which would you rather have, the martyrdom or the cage? I know where I'm going with that. Am I wrong? And another thing, we've all seen the pictures of the laser-guided bombs blowing hell out of the place where he was. 2 500-pounders would cause a massive amount of destruction. Has anyone explained how his body was in such good condition after being hit with a pair of 500-pound bombs? I mean, sure, he was scuffed up a bit in the pictures, but basically he was intact. How did that happen? I mean, it could be just a coincidence. I mean, but usually bodies are mutilated in an attack like that. I just found it kind of odd, and so did a lot of others I've talked to. In fact, I spoke to a forensic expert earlier today, and he said conditions would have to be nearly perfect for his body not to have been blown to bits. We'll probably never know. However, what we do know is that he definitely had a dime dropped on him, just like we said yesterday. His own organization wanted him out of the way ever since Baghdadi took his job away from him, and he was a liability with a $25 million bounty on his head, so you knew it wouldn't be long till he got his just rewards. And he got him yesterday. But you know the strange thing is, and maybe some of you have seen these pictures, and I've seen footage of it myself, video footage of the site that was broadcast on CNN showing a vast pile of cement rubble against a backdrop of palm trees. And, you know, the Iraqi civilians could be seen picking through the rubble and finding little more than an occasional piece of charred clothing or a blanket. Just an odd situation. I don't have any doubt the guy's dead. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the circumstances here are suspect. And after all we've heard from the Bush administration, you know, who could blame us for wondering what the actual truth is? We know that they lie just about even the smallest things for political gain. We know they do that. So, you know, why believe them now? Isn't it a shame? I'd like to believe them just once. I'd like to turn on the TV and look at Bush and say, yeah, I think I believe what he's saying. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Guy.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Caroline.
Hi, Caroline.
Hey, I don't buy into none of this Zarqawi story at all.
Mm-hmm.
Something really fishy. Look at the picture of him. He looks too pretty.
I think so, too. Yeah.
And look at the rubble. He was supposed to be bombed, you know, underneath of it. when they found him dead.
Right. And now we're hearing that he actually was alive. First, they denied that he was alive, and now they are reporting that he was, in fact, alive and actually spoke to them when they went and recovered him. So, you know, what's the truth? Where is the truth in this whole thing?
Well, anything comes out of this administration is always a lie.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do they expect people to believe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just sick of it. You know what we need? We need to have a revolution. Remove every single one of these people, every one of them, including Democrats, and put in real people in there.
Well, that's what we need. We need to, you know, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, about Democrats and Republicans taking advantage of these free trips and just, you know, just being in Washington for themselves. I'm so sick of that.
I am too. I mean, I used to be, I'm still am a very progressive, but I don't even call myself Democrat anymore. Because the vote, what they don't seem to represent us anymore.
Well, I still do call myself a Democrat strictly because I want to help and fix what's wrong with the party. You know, it's
I do want to help them, but it's like hard for me to do that anymore.
Oh, it
you
is.
You know what I'm saying? With the proud. I want to be proud of my party.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's my point. And that's why, you know, we talk about on this program. I mean, we've had some serious problems with the DNC and you know, our state party here in Florida and the state party in Ohio. We've had some serious issues with them, and we don't hold back on it. I mean, if we think the Democrats are screwing up, I'm more than happy to talk about it. They've got to get their act together. No question about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think within a couple of years, if this continues on, I think people are going to really, really get up and take it to the street. It's not going to be right now. I don't think it's quite there yet.
No,
it
isn't.
It's going to take a few more years.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. You know, how long will the public let it go this way? I mean, it's been quite a while now. And
right.
The only thing that I'm worried about is that instead of rising up and saying, hey, let's fix this thing, let's get politically involved, I'm afraid that a lot of people will just walk away from the whole situation and just let somebody else fix it, and that's when we run into trouble.
Exactly. Until I think what's going to happen is people have to really starve to death.
Yeah.
Before this thing gets to, you know, complete chaos and people get sick of it and take it to the street and finally say enough is enough.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it was Thomas Jefferson that said that a good revolution, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but he said a good revolution every once in a while wouldn't be a bad thing.
And, I agree. I mean, I may not be around when that happened, you know, not that I'm that old. I'm 51 years old, but that's, I'm hoping to see it, even though it may involve me, scary, but I think I would like to be part of it, to change this country around.
Yes, I would as well. That would give me great pleasure. I just,
you bet you. Okay, I was, thanks, Guy James.
Thanks for your call. But nice to hear
You're
from
welcome.
You.
You're welcome. Bye.
I was just talking to a friend the other day about that very thing. They asked me why I do what I do and what do I get out of what I do here. It would give me just more satisfaction, and I know many of you as well. It would just give me more personal satisfaction than you could possibly know if the party, my party, both parties turned around and we cleaned it up, the whole thing in Washington, if we cleaned it up and headed off in the right direction, having our political fights back and forth, but ultimately being able to come together and do things that are right for the country. That's what I'm after. That's what I care about. I care about leaving this country in better shape than when I found it. And you know what? So far, it's not. It's in far worse shape than when I was a child. And when our parents turned it over to us and people of my age, it was in far, far better shape than it is now. And I'm ashamed that I would leave this nation in the condition it is now into the hands of the next generation. I worry about that. I truly do. And so to answer my friend, that is one of the things that would give me tremendous satisfaction whenever the day comes to be able to leave this earth saying, you know, I helped. I made a difference. My country was off on the wrong path, and I helped put it back again. You know, call me a starry-eyed liberal and all those things that you call a good liberal, but that's the way I feel. I really do. And you should, if you don't know, you should know by now. I most certainly wouldn't be doing what I do the way I do it, and as many hours in the day I do it for no money, unless I really was passionate about this. I am passionate about it, and I just hope to God that we can change things around. Our party's in terrible condition. Hopefully we'll go a long way toward patching it up this year. We've just got to get the right doctors to work on it. I don't think the right doctors have been on the case for quite a while now. We need the DNC to butt out, the DLC to butt out, and let the grassroots people take over and show them what the American people want, let them know what the American people want, and that the grassroots is where it's at. Those are the people that own this party, that love this party, and work day and night hard for this party for no money, for no glory, for no other reason than because they love America. We're going to pause for a break right now. We most certainly are. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere.
President stood in front of the jet planes. The rubble's all settled and democracy reigns. We defeated their army, taken control, dropped thousands of bombs, and they've taken their toll. The oil's on fire, just like the blood of a billion Muslims dragged through the mud. And the world is safer with the dictator gone, and their lot will improve with our corporate pawn. The war is over. That's what he said, go back to your business. We've buried the dead and the war is over. Fatherless children have taken the street. All that remains is the sting of defeat. Homes are in ruins, cancer is rife. For soldiers and newborns, the end of a life. Kids grown up with just hunger and fear. But lo, behold, the Yankees are here. Now you people are gonna be free. Cause this land was made for Chevron and me. And the war is over. That's what he said, just turn on your TV. We've buried the dead and the war is over. The government files are all up in flames. His victims of torture, who remembers their names? The past doesn't matter, but the future is bright as the Exxon refinery lights up the night. History's looted like the library's shelves, but we'll fill them with Bibles, be proud of ourselves. Turn your schools into compounds, make room for us all. If you're missing your legs, you can learn how to crawl. The war is over. That's what he said, forget it all happened. We've buried the dead and the war is over. And the price was worth it, yeah, we do it again. With bombs or with sanctions, kids, women, and men. Cause we have national interests and they must be met. We will enforce them by treaty or jet. And when time has passed and we've had some rest, we'll find a new villain, cause that's what we do best. Maybe a sultan or a grandson of Mao, but don't trouble your conscience, because as of now, the war is over. That's what he said, just put it behind you. We've buried the dead and the war is over.
This is Colonel Ann Wright. I resigned from the State Department in protest over the war in Iraq the day the war began. I had served in the State Department for 16 years and for 29 years in the U.S. Army and Army Reserves. The war in Iraq was a war of choice, not a necessity for our national defense. The Bush administration now bombs countries rather than speaking to them. We in the Congress were lied to, and we need an investigation of those lies. Please ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney for the lies they have told and the dangerous situation they have placed our country in.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
WithEstateRadio.com.
Yes, indeed, you are tuned to the right place on your computer dial. Welcome to the Guy James Show. So good to have you along on this laid-back Friday is exactly what it is today. We're kind of laid back, and we're going to take your calls at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We were talking about earlier in the program that we caught Limbaugh again. This is bigger than his usual lies, though. Limbaugh, I shouldn't mention his name. I really shouldn't. He's not a credible person, and yet millions of people, he claims about 20 million people listen to him in the course of a week. I just can't understand why. I mean, I can't. If they want any kind of truth whatsoever, and that's the problem. If he wants to promote himself as a comedian, then fine. And isn't it odd, when you do ask any of your politicians, I know I called Congressman Connie Mack's office a few months back and asked them about a quote Mr. Limbaugh had said. I had a reason for calling him, and they said, oh, the comedian Limbaugh. Now, normally they think the guy's a god. You know, he can go to a Republican dinner and they'll stand and clap for him for an hour, but... You ask any serious Republican about the guy, and he's yeah, he's a comedian. No, not to the 20 million or however many million it is that actually listen to him. He was talking about today. I on my way to the studio today, I went flipping by the dial and see what Big Boy's going to say today. And he was said, hey, y'all want to be able to explode your liberal friends' heads over the weekend when they bring up this Zarqawi story? Y'all want to be able to just really put them away with some bona fide information? And he was just strutting his stuff like he normally does, you know. And boy, have we got them by the short ones this time. And I'm going to tell you just how to respond to these libs that tell you, the big deal that Zarqawi is no big deal, and his point was that we were shooting ourselves in the foot. We libs, in his vernacular, we libs were shooting ourselves in the foot because after all, we had claimed that there was no Al Qaeda presence in Iraq before the war. And now we're saying that Zarqawi was in, we were saying that there was no connection between Saddam and Al Qaeda. If you want to explode your libs friend's head, you know, those libs have been saying all this time that there was no connection between Saddam and Al Qaeda. But now that Zarqawi is dead, these libs are saying that Zarqawi had a lab set up making ricin up in northern Iraq with a bunch of political operatives from Saddam Hussein. He said officials from the Saddam Hussein administration. is what he said. Was up there at this lab with Hussein's own people making this ricin. How are the libs going to get out of that one? They're now saying that he was working up there with Saddam's people, and before the war, they were saying there was no connection. And he cites this NBC Jim Mikliszewski article that stating that Saddam was up there. I mean, not Saddam was up there. I meant that Zarqawi was up there making this ricin in this lab. As you know, it's a terrible poison. Fact is, Rush, that's not what the article said at all. Rush, if you're going to explode your liberal friend's head, you're going to have to do better than that, my boy, because the article made no mention of Zarqawi working with any people from Saddam Hussein's regime. No mention whatsoever. None. Nada. Zip. Nothing. Zarqawi was up there on his own doing this with his small grand band of followers. There was no connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein despised the ground bin Laden walked on, and vice versa. One was a religious man, the other was not. And so there was no connection from it, and as try as they might, these neocons have tried to connect the two, and they've never been able to connect the dots. In fact, the longer they talk about it, the farther away the dots get, and the less connection there actually is. So here we have Rush, the right-wing king, on the radio today saying Zarqawi was in northern Iraq working with some officials from Saddam Hussein's regime. And all us libs were saying there was no connection, and this proves we don't know what we're talking about. Rushy boy, you had it right. He was working at a lab in northern Iraq with a small band of his followers, unbeknownst to the Saddam Hussein regime. There were the article that you bring up never mentioned anybody from Saddam Hussein being involved in that whole matter. So once again, and we got to figure out some kind of a bit to do about this every week, the Limbaugh Lie of the Week or something. Once again, Rush Limbaugh is a big fat liar. And what else can you say? What else can you say? And what is the truth about Zarqawi's leg? What you say is the story about Zarqawi's leg. Do you remember Colin Powell going before the United Nations and trying to claim that Zarqawi had a connection with Saddam Hussein because he was in the hospital in Baghdad having his leg amputated? Do you remember that? I remember it. And now they're saying he didn't have his leg amputated? Did he or didn't he? When they found this guy yesterday, did he have two legs or one? I'd like to know. But Colin Powell claimed in front of the UN, the speech he made that day, which he now says is a stain on his career, and I hardly agree. It was a major stain on your career, General Powell. Secretary Powell, I guess, is when you finally left public life. But he went in front of the UN and claimed that Zarqawi had his leg amputated, and therefore there must be a connection because he was in a hospital in Baghdad. We don't know if he had his leg amputated or not, but what we do know that no link between Zarqawi and Saddam Hussein has ever been made, not even remotely. So, Rushy boy, caught you again. One more time, we caught you in another big, fat lie. But what else is new? What else is new? Speaking of Limbaugh, you know, he'll defend anything that happens over on the right wing. Anything that comes up, he will, you know, he defend Ann Coulter. Of course, they're all defending Ann Coulter, and we'll talk about that in a little while. But on a show, a long time ago, on one of our Guy James show, it was right after Mr. Bush, Junior Bush, had made his famous bring 'em on statement. You all remember that, and so does he. He brought it up recently that he's kind of sorry he said it now, but you can't take it back, you see, because they did bring it on. Zarqawi and the boys and everybody over there that hates America's guts, oh, they brought it on, all right. Almost 25 American deaths, 100 American deaths later, they brought it on big time. So this was right after Bushy said that, and I found the cut this morning. I don't know why I saved this, but I did. But I got a phone call. I got a phone call from a nice lady named Mary that had a son in Iraq. And I'll just let you listen to this.
Of all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so arouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them? Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring 'Em On. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary.
I have a son in Iraq, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February. When he get back here, he'll be on your own. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. You got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. And this is too much for them to die away on. In some land that they don't know about, every day I get scared. I just want to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
Rushy boy, even Junior Bush has apologized for that remark, but you never have about what you said there, did you? You never apologized for it at all. You never admitted you were wrong. Even Junior Bush has admitted he was wrong doing that, but not you, Rush. No, you'll stick by it come hell or high water. You will, and so will Hannity, and so will Laura Ingraham and Bortz and O'Reilly and the usual crew. No matter what. No matter what the guy does, no matter what he says, no matter what anybody on the right does, these people will stick with it. God forbid that I would ever act that way. And if I ever do, I want you to call me and chastise me for sticking up for any Democrat all the time. Every Democrat's right all the time, forever and ever. No Democrat ever does anything wrong. If I ever come to that point, someone call me and bring me back to my senses. Because anybody with any sense whatsoever knows you can't believe everything out of every politician's mouth. You just know that. That's the nature of the beast. But here we have a group of people on the right wing with a monstrous size audience every day that they preach to day in and day out, the largest audiences of any programs in America. And you ask, why do they have the largest? I'll explain. But here they have the largest audience of anybody in America preaching hate, preaching disinformation every single day. Is it any wonder America is screwed up? Is it any wonder that you've got news organizations like Drudge and Newsmax and Fox News and the likes of Pills Limbaugh and Hannity and the whole group of them standing by the right wing no matter what they do, no matter how vile, how nasty, how wrong, how illegal, they stand by them every step of the way. My God, what could be wrong with you to act like that? What could be wrong with you to act like that? I just don't know. Why do we care so much about this? Why do we? You know, this war is now up to $370 billion. Congress recently put some more money into it. $370 billion. And the monthly cost for the war is going up. Yes, our expenses are going up. And did you hear by any chance today Mr. Bush talking with, I don't know, the ambassador, I forget what country he was from, did the little Rose Garden thing with the two podiums and each one of them saying something. And Junior Bush said that, and he got things backward and made an ass of himself once again. Oh, I'm so tired of that. He said that when the Iraqis stand down in the war on terror, the Americans will stand up. That's what he said. Mark my word, you'll see it on the news tonight. When the Iraqis stand down, the Americans will stand up. Well, Mr. Bush, that's exactly what's been happening all along. Now it's up to 250,000 troops, they say, we've got trained over there. Doesn't seem they're standing up very well now, does it? No. And are the Americans being able to stand down? No. We send, 1,500, 3,000, I forget how many. More troops? More troops in? Instead of standing down? And we've trained 250. Let me ask you a question. If America has approximately 150,000 people there now, and we've trained 250,000 Iraqis, that comes to 400,000 troops to fight Al-Qaeda and the local insurgency, okay? 400,000. We have no control over the situation from all intents and purposes. I can't see any news that says we're defeating the violence whatsoever. Can you? There you'll have to admit, even if you're the hardest of hardcore right-wingers, we're not making any progress in knocking down the violence in Iraq. And we have 150,000 of ours and 250,000 of theirs, a total of 400,000 troops on the ground over there now, and can't stop the violence. And Donald Rumsfeld thought we could go in there with 150,000 people and take care of this situation, and now we've got 400,000 and we can't? Does that prove he's a dope or what? Does it? And yet he is still ahead of the Defense Department, still in charge of the lives of our American boys and girls over there. Still, because G.W. Bush is too goddamn stupid to admit that he made a mistake. That just irritates me to no end. Think of the numbers. If you're a right-winger listening to the program, Republican, take the numbers I just said and use your head. Use your logic on it. Even his own daddy, Sidney Blumenthal, had an article out talking about how former President George Herbert Walker Bush waged a secret campaign over several months earlier this year to remove Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Even Junior Bush's father, who is friends with Donald Rumsfeld, even his father wants Rumsfeld out of the... You know, Bush even went so far as to recruit Rumsfeld's potential replacement. But Junior said, no, we got to stay... We got to stay the course. Sidney Blumenthal, a several-time guest on this program, wrote a great article about it, talking about how many times in his life Daddy Bush has tried to save Junior Bush from trouble. The effort to pluck, in Sidney's words, this effort to pluck George W. from his troubles is the latest episode in a recurrent drama from the drunken young man challenging his father to go mano a mano on the front lawn of the family home in Kennebunkport, Maine, to the father pulling strings to get his son into the Texas Air National Guard and helping salvage his finances from George W.'s mismanagement of Harkin Energy. Over and over and over again, the father has saved the son. One screw up after another. And daddy has always come to the rescue. But this time, Georgie spurned his father's advice. No. We're going to stay the course with Donnie Rumsfeld. Because you see, Dad, if I admitted now that Rumsfeld was a big mistake, if I admitted now that his plan to go into Iraq and conquer him in a week and then, you know, take over and everything was going to be milk and honey, if I admitted that now, that would make me look stupid, Daddy. Wait a minute. I am stupid. You know, speaking of that, a good friend of mine and I this morning, we're having a conversation about this. We're talking politics, and we talk about politics about every single day. And he almost had me convinced a couple of years ago, well, maybe 3 years ago, I don't know. He almost had me convinced that, you heard the talk, that Junior Bush was sly like a, dumb like a fox, you know? A lot of people were saying it. Ah, that's just an act. That's just an act to throw people off of the trail. That's just to disarm people so that they'll think he's stupid, and then he can take advantage of them. That's a good old Texas thing the boys down there do. They give that old Texas drawl like he tries, you know, although he's from where, Connecticut and Kennebunkport, Maine. But he'd give you that Texas drawl, And in the way he does it with his smirks and all, he just kind of sounds kind of stupid. But my friends and my good friend that I spoke to this morning said, well, you know, that's all an act. That is all an act. He's just trying to, you know, he's going to come around and swat you upside the head. You think he's stupid and he's going to get the best of you? Uh-uh. Au contraire. He is stupid. I'm sorry if that offends anybody, but what more evidence do you need? What more evidence do you need? Stands in front of the American public today and says, well, we'll stand up when the Iraqis stand down. How many times you got to hear crap like that coming out of his mouth until you finally figure, now, wait a minute. Wait just a cotton-picking minute here. This guy doesn't have both oars in the water. I don't know. I figured it out quite a while ago that it's not an act. It really isn't an act. And I don't know, sometimes maybe I should feel sorry for the guy. I don't. I don't feel sorry for him, really, but he just shouldn't have inflicted this pain upon America. Having no sense, I wish he would have had enough sense to know that when he was the governor of Texas that he'd gone as far as he ought to go on his daddy's name and his daddy's money and his friends putting him up and using him as a puppet. He'd gone as far as he should go. If he had any sense, any at all, he would have realized then and there that he couldn't pull this off. Yeah, he had his brain Karl Rove working for him, putting him in office, and it was Karl's idea, I guess, to run him for president. I don't know if Junior came up with the idea. I can't imagine that he ever went to be, you know, I think I'll run for president. I don't think it happened that way. I've read where Karl Rove was the one that went around saying, I'm going to run this boy for president. You talk about a good hand puppet. Ho, 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 ho. We'll get everything we want out of this boy. Well, it didn't quite turn out that way. And what Karl got for the neocons is a whole bushel and a peck full of trouble. Lots of trouble. So much trouble, in fact, that it may take them a long time to recover from it. I hope so. But the simple fact that he didn't have enough good sense to understand that he just was in no way qualified to be president of the United States, that alone, that just irritates the hell out of me. It really does. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give the program a call today. Finishing up this Zarqawi story, you know, we talked to our good friend Brian Katulis yesterday, and he had an article over on thinkprogress.org, and I'll just read you a little bit of it. I think the guy, you know, he's a Middle East expert, and he said the death of terrorist Zarqawi is unquestionably good news, but there's little evidence that his absence will create a vacuum in the foreign fighter leadership in Iraq. 2 points. Number one, Zarqawi was replaced as head of Iraq's insurgency months ago. Recall the news from earlier this spring that Zarqawi had been replaced as leader in Iraq by al-Baghdadi. Al-Qaeda's Iraq cells had already reorganized before this happened and will readjust again. And point number two, al-Qaeda's global leadership was getting sick of their partner in Zarqawi. Last year, Osama bin Laden chief deputy, Zawahiri, sent a letter to Zarqawi that contained a striking critique of Zarqawi's insurgency strategy. It comes down like a ton of bricks on what's happened tactically, one U.S. analyst said, describing the letter. Even Iraqis sympathetic with the goals of the insurgency have grown to disapprove of al-Qaeda's actions. Over the last year, there were several instances in which the local population turned on Zarqawi's followers and attacked them. In other words, Zarqawi's star had fallen over the last 6 months, and there is reason to believe that his falling from favor was a key ingredient in this operation. Someone gave up the details on him because they wanted him out. Of course, this doesn't change the fact that we should rejoice in today's news, but we should also be clear in our analysis about what it means for the next step. There is little evidence of a leadership vacuum in the foreign fighter leadership and cause for serious concern that the current violence in Iraq will not abate. Brian Katulis. You can catch that article on thinkprogress.org. We did enjoy having him on the program yesterday. If you want advice on the Middle East, go to him. He'll give you the right advice every time. Very knowledgeable man. And what a pleasure it is to talk to knowledgeable people about the Middle East instead of goons like Rumsfeld and some of the generals that have been standing up in front of us telling how wonderful things are, when the generals in the field over there have a different story. The ones who have the courage to speak out. I don't know. It's a mess. But anyway, we're gonna wrap up this Zarqawi thing and move on to another subject coming up here and right after the news. So don't go away. We'll be back with you right after the news. Hopefully you'll call us. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you on this lazy old Friday afternoon. You're listening to The Guy James Show. We'll be back after the news. Don't go away.
This is Quality News Network. Palestinian authorities say 6 people, including 3 children, have been killed by Israeli shells, which hit a beach in northern Gaza Strip today. At least 25 people were wounded. The Israeli military says it has halted all shelling of Gaza and has launched an inquiry into whether ground-based artillery could have been involved. 3 more people died in another Israeli airstrike in Gaza. The incidents come one day after a senior Palestinian official was killed in an Israeli airstrike in southern Gaza. In light of the bombings, the Hamas-led Palestinian government is urging President Mahmoud Abbas to abandon plans for a referendum on statehood that would implicitly recognize Israel. A curfew is in effect in Baghdad and Bakuba to enhance security in the wake of yesterday's killing of al-Qaeda in Iraq leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi in a U.S. airstrike. Based on evidence collected at the site of his destroyed hideout, U.S. troops have arrested at least 24 people and seized a hidden cache of weaponry, Iraqi army uniforms, and other materials. In Washington, a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers employee has been indicted for charging inflated apartment leases for military personnel in Kuwait in exchange for $47,000 in bribes from a real estate agent. Congressional negotiators have put the final touches on a $94.5 billion funding bill, which includes $65.8 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and $20 billion for rebuilding in the Gulf states. Congress is expected to approve it early next week. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, who's been indicted on campaign finance charges in Texas, officially resigns his seat in Congress today. He says he has no regrets. Secretary of Veterans Affairs is telling Congress that it's possible the thieves who stole a computer containing the personal records of millions of veterans may have erased the data. Immigrants throughout this country are applying for citizenship in record numbers. More than 250,000 filed applications between January and April, and that's an 18% increase from a year ago. And last month, visitors to the INS website downloaded 140,000 citizenship applications, nearly twice as many as last May. Austria's chancellor, who is the current president of the European Union, says that Iran has until the Group of Eight summit in Russia next month to consider an offer of incentives to suspend its nuclear enrichment program. The 3-day summit begins on July 15th. A Bosnian Serb wanted by the UN War Crimes Tribunal for rape and torture has been handed over to Bosnia by Russia, and about 1 million Thais swarmed into central Bangkok today to catch a rare glimpse of their king, the world's longest reigning monarch, on the 60th anniversary of his rule. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Baggage handlers and ramp workers at Northwest Airlines today approved concessions aimed at helping the carrier emerge from bankruptcy protection. JetBlue has announced a new shuttle service between Washington and New York with fares as low as $39 each way. The new service begins in August. The U.S. trade deficit rose in April to $63.4 billion, pushed higher by surging oil prices and a flood of imports from China. The Federal Reserve says that the net wealth of American households rose in the first quarter of this year as real estate and financial assets gained value. Now that it's been approved by the FDA, federal vaccine experts are widely expected to recommend that all 11 to 12-year-old girls get a vaccine against cervical cancer, but its reach could be limited by its high price and religious objections to its use. The House voted overwhelmingly last night to make it easier for phone carriers such as Verizon and AT&T to offer pay television services. The bill grants national franchising rights to phone companies in an effort to help them quickly launch internet-based TV services that could act as an alternative to cable. The FDA is ordering makers of unapproved prescription cough and cold medicines containing the drug carbinoxamine to stop selling them within 30 to 90 days, citing concerns the drug may be harmful to young children. Light sweet crude oil is trading this hour at $71.30 a barrel. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrial Average is down 44 points, NASDAQ is down by 5, and the S&P 500 is also down 5. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana.
Country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hi, yes. Welcome back. Glad to have you back for the second hour of today's Guy James Show. Do want to remind everybody that we will be in Washington coming up on Monday and Tuesday doing the show live from the Washington Hilton on Connecticut Avenue. Just right around DuPont Circle there. Wonderful area of Washington, D.C., not far from Ambassador's Row and Embassy Row and all that. I love that town. I really do. Some of it's not so nice, but some of it's just so doggone nice. I've always said I'd love to go live in Washington for just a couple of years. The congestion and all that is bad and all, but I'd like to live in just one of those nice brownstones right there on the I got this turned around on the west side of the White House. Just up Connecticut Avenue, or just between I Street and Connecticut, right in that area someplace. Oh my, that would be a nice place to live just for a couple of years. That's all I want. I think I'd have enough then. Just enough to learn everything. I'm one of those weirdos. Can't get enough of the historical aspect of that town. Just love to learn everything. Stayed in a little hotel last time I was there, right beside the Monroe House, the James Monroe House, and what an interesting place that was. So if you get to Washington, look around. Check it out. There's more to it than just a bunch of crooked politicians, believe me. Really and truly. Really, they're not all crooked either, but there's a whole lot more to that town than that, so I encourage you to go. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Hi, Guy.
Yes?
This is Eric Peterson from Vermont.
Hi, Eric. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm in good standing today, I think.
You're doing a fine job. Boy, you're getting off of feisty.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, you know,
I wanted to know if we could talk about the bases that are going to be permanentized in Iraq. So, in past history of the president, that indicates that he doesn't want to do that because the Iraqi people are going to have their freedom independently from any sort of U.S. control.
Well, they're trying to sneak it in there again, the Republicans are.
Well, maybe you could help me out, because I was trying to Google search a bunch of stuff here, and apparently we got 17 bases, and I have the names of them, the old name, the new name with Arabic, and English, but I was under the, I had the understanding that there was a bill that was passed by the Senate, a bill that was passed by the House, and that went into conference committee yesterday morning. I couldn't find the Google search. I apologize. And I was told, or I had read on the Internet someplace, that that had been sort of like negated through conference committee between the two houses in terms of formulating that no money should be spent on any sort of permanent basis. The figure that I had was 17 permanent basis, though we want to have the Iraqi people have independent domain over their own country. Do you have any insight on that, Guy?
Well, yes, I do. I'm not sure about the number. I was thinking it was 13. But, you know, the House and Senate went on record opposing the permanent basis, the House and the Senate. But now the Republicans are trying to sneak them back in into the middle of the night. Barbara Lee, Congressman Barbara Lee, has been talking about this subject. I had a quote from her someplace. Anyway, she was talking about that the Republicans are willing just to ruin the legislative process and just sneak things in again in the middle of the night to try and put the money back in for these bases. And there's going to be an upcoming floor debate on it next week, I believe. And we'll probably know more then. But they are trying mightily, the Republicans are, to get this put back in. I think the House and the Senate, and I believe it was unanimous, approved amendments introduced by Joe Biden and
Joe
Barbara
Biden
Lee.
Joe Biden was one of them, yes.
Yeah, and Barbara Lee was the other one. And two amendments to prevent funds in this bill from being appropriated to establish permanent military bases in Iraq. So we'll see what happens next week. They're going to debate it next week. Will, you bring up such an interesting subject here today. I wasn't going to talk about that, but will these...
I apologize for...
Oh, no. I love this. Will these guys in have the gall to go ahead and try and push for this when the American public has shown without question that they're against this war now and the interest in it is waning? And not the interest, but the support for it is waning. Will they have the cojones to go ahead and pass a bunch of money, put it through for these bases? Wow, that would be, I don't know.
I don't know. It clearly demonstrates to me, in my perspective, that it seems like they look for a staging area for the whole Middle East.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't seem as though some of the comments that President Bush has made in previous years that we are not looking for a permanent president in the Middle East to be, it's something that would be in effect in the future. And I really can't understand why we would be spending so much money to develop these permanent bases, to say less about that beautiful ambassadorship that they're going to have down there, whatever it is, larger than the Vatican. But I can't understand why they are seemingly being so deceptive in what they want to purvey to the American people as being our control over the Middle East. If we're looking for democracy in nation building, which was not part of the Republican platform or George Bush's platform in 2000, I can't understand why would the American people tolerate so much money being spent to have an area of, whatever the numbers, whether 13, 14, 16, 17 bases as being a permanent structure of Iraq. It seems like a very imperialistic, not capitalistic, imperialistic structure to me in terms of the agenda for the Bush administration in this effort.
Absolutely. I mean, nail in the head right there. You got it. There is no question that the United States, I wish I could remember it. My memory isn't what it ought to be. But just the other day, I read an article by a general who had been relieved of his duties early on in Iraq. And he was talking about this plan that he had seen by the United States military, and he had seen it, and it laid out the whole plans for the Iraq invasion, and it had nothing to do with democracy or anything. It had to do with securing the Iraqi oil wells, securing the Iraqi pipelines, and all that. That's what it was all about. That's still what it's all about. That's all it ever was about, was establishing a presence. You're so right, Eric, establishing a presence there. It's got to do with Iraq. It's got to do with Iran. It's got to do with the entire Middle East. We are going to take the oil. That's it. Plain and simple. We're going to.
Well, sad thing, because, you know, 40 or 50 years ago, we did have people in this country that were developing engineering-wise sources that we wouldn't have to be fighting and having our American troops killed. We're up to 2,489, according to eye casualties, as of 10 minutes ago, in terms of the amount of American troops that have died to fight for this imperialistic control of oil, when 40 years ago we could have developed alternative sources where we didn't need to have this.
Absolutely right. And you know, will I sit here and defend the Democrats on this? Either. Neither party has done what they ought to do. Neither party has produced on this issue of coming up with alternative fuels and all that. We're going to wait, you know, just is so indicative of average American. We're going to wait till the last possible minute, until that last drop of oil is being squeezed from the ground, before we get real serious about it. And God only knows what that'll do to the economy and everything. I hope somebody gets serious about it before then.
As in the song that I had in A Love Affair, it's too late, it's too late, it's too late. And I hope not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're
Thank you for doing a great job on there, Joe. And, boy, I'm telling you, man, you're doing a great job, Guy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thanks. It's great to hear from you. And I'm glad you brought that point up today. That's something we'll certainly be talking about next week, with these weasels going to try and sneak that through again. I'm glad you brought it up. Thank you. And, yeah, great point. The Republicans tried to sneak that in again in the middle of the night. They're going to try and pass in, throw a bunch of money in for permanent bases in Iraq. The American people want permanent bases in Iraq? Actually, that's the second question that should be asked. Do the Iraqi people want permanent bases in Iraq? I should say not. Maybe a few of them. They're planning on making a buck off of Americans here somehow. Let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
This is Alice.
Hi.
I don't believe Iraq was a mistake, and I don't believe you do either. They have been planning it for years. It's oil and money for them.
Oh, absolutely.
They are dishonest.
Follow the money.
Yeah. I still believe that anyone in that house yesterday, when those two big bombs hit, would be getting scraped off of the debris.
Hamburger.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I do, too. You know, I did talk to some forensic people this morning, two of them, as a matter of fact, and both of them said they didn't know whether they wanted to buy the whole story of how this happened or not. I mean, he's dead, that's for sure, but how it happened is going to turn out to be a whole other story, I'm sure.
Oh, sure.
I mean, why should we start expecting the truth from them now at this late date?
I don't know how you can get the truth out of them.
No, it doesn't pay to even ask them for the truth. You know right off the bat you're going to get the wrong story every single time. So, you know, that's one of those things. Alice, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Nice to hear from you.
Bye.
I want to touch on the Coulter situation just for a second, and we'll get off of that, too, and move on. I want to talk about these privately funded trips on Capitol Hill that just makes you want to barf, really. The thing I want to ask here, and let me play a little clip here I've got from one of my favorite websites. I know a lot of you go to buzzflash.com. And let me see here. Where do I have that? Here we go. And our thanks to BuzzFlash.com for GOP Hypocrite of the Week.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. We don't know who Matt Lauer voted for in 2004, but seriously, interviewing Ann Coulter on the Today Show makes you a GOP hypocrite. That's because Coulter is an individual who, if she were a Democrat, would be arrested on sight if she showed up in the NBC studios. BuzzFlash readers know how vile and detestable she is, but her calls for the deaths of liberals, the bombing of the New York Times building, and the destruction of all Muslims, among other exhortations, makes her a terrorist provocateur, not just another shock troop GOP propaganda shill. Coulter appeared on the Today Show to plug her latest inflammatory book and gain some publicity to push its sales. In the course of the interview with Lauer, she attacked the 9/11 widows in the most uncivilized, loathsome, and inexcusable, hideous manner imaginable. Coulter did everything to degrade television standards of decency, except stand up on her chair, lift her skirt, and sing Springtime for Hitler in Germany. Lauer did, we concede, make an effort to challenge Coulter about her unseemly assertions about the 9/11 widows, but he sealed his fate as an enabler when he closed the segment by saying, quote, "Always fun to have you here." As we all know, NBC is owned by General Electric, which is as close to the Bush administration as a nut to a screw. Lauer, whichever party he may vote for, is a GOP hypocrite for continuing to host the Today Show and accept partisan assignments such as interviewing Coulter. If he had any dignity, he would have resigned. But by going with the flow and giving Coulter a platform, Lauer is pretending that he has journalistic integrity when he is cavorting with a right-wing terrorist. For that reason, Matt Lauer is named the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week.
Oh, yeah, don't you know? Was that right on the money or not? They always have a good one there on BuzzFlash. I enjoy that website. I go visit it every single day, and I hope a lot of you will as well. I love the part about standing on a chair, lifting her skirt, and singing Springtime. That was a good one. That was a good one. Right on the money, though. Matt, I'd like to be a fly on the wall in some of these offices, so-called news offices, especially his the other day. And I could tell he was a bit upset with Coulter. I could tell that. But what keeps you from saying, you know, just telling her? What does? Is it the steak? Steak instead of hamburger. That's where I'm going at here. Is it the big money? I mean, obviously it is. Follow the money. Is that it? The just once? Wouldn't one of these big-time TV people stand up and say, hey, just a minute. Just a minute, you crazy woman. Why wouldn't somebody do that just one time? Just stand up and say, you know, you're nuts. You're just plain nuts. Just one time, I'd like to see one. I would. I mean, everybody that knows me know I would. I'd cut loose on her. I wouldn't care. And that's why I'm not in a position Matt Lauer's in. Because he will compromise on things like that, and I will not. Compromise is a big deal, I guess. It's called sucking up. It's called kissing up. That's what it is. It's called, in the vernacular, brown nosing. You know what I mean. So I would love to be in the studio. Is this something that goes unsaid in a big news organization like NBC? Did anybody warn Matt Lauer that morning? Did his boss call him in the office before and say, you know, we're going to have Ann Coulter on here today, and she's going to say some pretty provocative things and pretty nasty things, and although I don't think they're so nasty, and Matt, I don't want you, I don't want you giving her a hard time or anything. I mean, you can grill her a little bit, but no one to back off, Matt. No one to back off, and don't be getting nasty with her. She actually said to him at one point, oh, you're getting testy with me? I would have said, you bet your ass I'm getting testy with you. Used to. Well, she is a woman. She is a woman that doesn't know how to engage in actual political discussion, an actual political discourse. She does not know how to do that. Every time she tries it, she gets herself in big trouble. I heard Alan Combs the other day ask her. She said something about how certain Democrats are always saying this, and he asked her to name names, and of course she could not because she'd made up the whole thing. And she, I'm not going to get involved in that name-naming thing. Blah, 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 blah. It's because she doesn't know, and she cannot participate in a good political discourse. She can argue. There is no question that Ann Coulter is a master of argument, but it's not rational argument. It's usually to the point where you start the ad hominem attacks and that sort of thing. I mean, she's a master at it. She is. Maybe the best. That wouldn't get her on my show, although I guess you could say the last couple of days talking about her, it probably has gotten her. I hope I haven't sold any books for her, though. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
Did you see Lou Dobbs last night?
No, I didn't. I missed Lou last night.
Well, a lot of people try to get him not to have her own. And I would say he came. He was kind of trying to be nice and trying to get some points in, but I don't think that they really came across. And of course, then he said, "Well, you might want to read her book. You might have fun." But,
fun.
You know, it's kind of like Matt Lauer, I guess. You know what to say, but she compared herself to Jesus, and she compared herself to Mark Twain. She got very insulted when he called her the right-wing Michael Moore. Call me that.
I didn't know
I'm
that.
I'm more like Mark Twain.
Mark,
And she compared herself to Jesus Christ when he went in to clean out the temple. She said, "That's what I'm here for," you know. He said, "Well, I'll have to think about the Mark Twain thing."
Yeah, I'd have to think about it a while too. A beloved.
But it'd be interesting to see him tonight and see. I'm sure he got a lot of feedback because he got him before she came on. But she was her nasty self. She was saying a lot of that stuff she said on Matt Lauer.
What do you think? What do you think? Is she simply out to sell books, or does she mean it?
I think a lot of it is an act.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've seen her for a long time. I used to watch her on Bill Myers. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know the. Politically correct.
Oh, yeah. And of course, let's not forget.
He could get her told.
And let's not forget that she was involved in the Monica Lewinsky affair as well. That's probably how she really got her start.
They listened to all those tapes.
Yeah.
Have you ever listened to those tapes that Linda made?
No.
It's disgusting.
No, I have not.
She egged that girl on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They knew what they were doing. A couple of gals a little bit older, a little bit wiser.
Yeah.
They put it to that Monica Lewinsky girl.
And then at her house, she would play the tapes for all of them, including Ann Coulter. But you could just, you know, she was an older woman, and she could have said, "Now listen, you know, let it go."
Mm-hmm.
No, she egged it on. She just kept on egging her on. He has no right to do you that way.
No. Well, she saw dollar signs in front of her, front of her eyes.
Yeah. I don't think she got as many as she thought she would.
Well, I did hear her make a statement the other night. They said on an interview, "Are you doing this for money?" And she said, "I have all the money I'll ever need. I didn't do it for money."
Oh, she brought up about the left murdering all these babies, aborted babies. How many children has she took in?
Yeah.
If she's got all that money,
how
many kids are she helping out?
That's right. And, you know, she like another one I want to talk about in just a minute ago, she's not too old to head on over to Iraq if she'd like to join up. They'll take her.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, if she could pass the physical.
Because she sure does want to kill them.
Yeah. So I, you know, hey, get that rifle in your hand and head on over there, Ann. Baby, I'm all for it.
That's right.
I'll get you the phone number of the recruiter.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Annie Coulter. I don't know whether to do this first. I got a little cut I want to put. David Horowitz. Why do I listen to these people ever? I mean, this guy's a demon. But David Horowitz, probably one of the, listen to what he has to say about this culture deal. I mean, I wanted to puke when I heard this.
Joining us now from Los Angeles is a man who has been attacked personally many times, usually by far-left people. David Horowitz is the founder of the Center for the Study of Popular Culture. Ann Coulter is defiant. I mean, she says basically, look, this is my message. This is how I get it out. I don't care whether they're personal attacks or not. What say you?
Well, Ann Coulter is a national treasure, and her point is right on the mark. You know, she's a satirist, and satirists are going to push the envelope, and if you look at it out of context, it can look like it went over the top.
Okay.
But she's not going to get a fair shake for her, you know, her sentiments anyway.
Not going to get a fair shake. Ann Coulter's not going to get a fair shake.
How many million books has she sold since she started? She's not going to get a fair shake. Ask the Richard Mellon Scaife group if she gets a fair shake from them. How many 100,000 books have they bought of hers in her career so far? Not going to a national treasure. Did you see that? I know I'm the only one in the world who sits and watches it. But did you see Horowitz's speech that he gave? Where was it? At Duke? Or was it at North Carolina? North Carolina University, I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was North Carolina. Yeah, one or the other. Anyway, he was standing up on the stage giving a speech, and he had a big old nasty bodyguard standing behind him. I want to tell you, if I wasn't man enough to go up on a stage and say what I wanted to say without a bodyguard, I guess I wouldn't do it. Shows what a wimp David Horowitz actually is, what a coward. He actually is. Most of these people that go up and spout crap like that are coward. Go up on the stage with this big, burly bodyguard standing there watching the crowd every minute and make sure somebody doesn't come after him. Wow. I saw that, and And there's one more. There's one more, and I'm going to get off this subject. I read with interest the column written today by Michelle Malkin. Michelle Malkin. You know, the one she wrote about Lieutenant Aaron Watata, who's refusing to participate in the war in Iraq for the reason that he won't be a participant in war crimes, which is what he considers a lot of this stuff. Of course, Malkin says he's a deserter, a seditionist, and every other name in the book, you know, the ones they always use. The guy's refusing to fight in Iraq because his own personal ethics would be compromised. He's seen the war crimes. He doesn't want to participate in them. Malkin absolutely demonizes Lieutenant Watata, and I got a question for you, Michelle. I do. I got a question for you. You're within the age limit for volunteers for the Bush War. You most certainly are. Why are you not wearing a uniform if this war is such a holy crusade to be so proud of? Why not? Why not, Michelle? You excoriate anybody not wanting to be part of the Bush War, but I notice you're not getting your ass shot for no good reason whatsoever. I should think that all of you right-wing big mouths would want to drive your limos on over to the local recruiting station and sign up, and encourage all of your friends' kids to sign up as well. That's the first thing I ask nowadays if a right-winger starts that crap with me. Are your kids in the military? If so, I will listen to you. I may not agree with you, but I will respectfully listen. But if you haven't sent your kids to the recruiting station and encouraged all of your relatives to do the same with their kids, then don't bother with that crap with me. As long as you assholes act like this is somebody else's war to fight, then stay out of my face. You know, when it comes down to it, Michelle Malkin is just trying to out-Coulter and Coulter, and I really don't think she's man enough to do it. I really don't. Honestly, I don't. Oh, why do I do it? Why do I talk about these people at all? I don't know. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back in just a moment or two, so don't go anywhere.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg, we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice. The Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Ed Asner. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured targeted civilians and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Are you a conservative Republican who believes George W. Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says, we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all that, then you'll certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and social security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the president's war, you are a super patriot, and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous fighting words, bring 'em on. Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
You know what I think they ought to do? They ought to get one of those big old military buses. You know, the big old brown buses, you know, says, I don't know what says United States Army on the side of it and whatever, and make one into a recruiting bus. They probably have something like this. And bring it on down here, not far from where I live, a little place down in Naples, Florida called Gulf Drive. Those of you that have seen Gulf Drive, quite a place, I must say. Some $20, $30 million homes, that sort of thing down that way. And yes, drive that down Gulf Drive and find out where all the kids live that are of age. And, of course, that's a heavy, heavy, heavy-duty Republican area. I'm talking heavy-duty Republican. And just drive down through there and knock on the doors every place where they know there's a kid old enough to be eligible to fight in the war. And say, hey, what about it, Sonny? Or Susie? You wanna join up? Got to just do that. Just drive down in all the Republican neighborhoods. Everybody that's back in this war that thinks it's just one hell of a good idea, as long as it's somebody else's kid. Let's talk them into it. Let's get a little patriotism going here from these folks. Yes. Let's do a survey. And in fact, I know a survey has been done. I don't have the facts at my fingertips right now. But let's talk about the survey some of these days on the show about the average income of the parents of the kids who happen to be in Iraq right now, as opposed to those Republicans down in Gulf Drive and like that. You suppose that's got anything to do with it, why the poor kids, by and large, it's those that don't have a whole lot, that never did have a whole lot, that are fighting the war? The cannon fodder for the Bush war? It's all well and good to send somebody else's kid to get slaughtered, isn't it? Just fine. Just not my little Johnny or Susie. That's how it is, isn't it? I think all of you that saw Fahrenheit 9/11 saw Michael Moore out in the street corner interviewing the congressman about having his kid in Iraq. Oh, well, a little bit of a touchy subject there all of a sudden. Hey. Speaking of congressmen, I promise you, I don't know who to talk about first. All of them are Tommy DeLay. I did want to talk about Tommy DeLay, and maybe I'll get to that in a little bit. How many of you saw his speech yesterday? Oh, my God. And before that, I get to that, the thought for the day. Until now, every generation of Americans has traded safety for liberty. From the Lexington Green to the Normandy beaches, from the Sons of Liberty to the Freedom Riders, it's been part of the American narrative that risks are taken to expand freedom, not freedoms sacrificed to avoid risk. Only in this generation, only on our watch, has the march reversed. Instead of swapping safety for liberty, this generation, under the leadership of George W. Bush, has chosen to trade liberties for safety. Robert Perry. Thank you, Robert. A very appropriate thought. Very appropriate. All right. Now it's time to talk about all of them. Maybe not all of them, but quite a few of them. Dems, Repubs, who knows? How many of you saw the story in the Washington Post just a few days about the privately funded trips on Capitol Hill. Oh, my God. Oh, unbelievable stories. That I was even shocked. And I'm not easily shocked. But I got to admit, I was a little bit shocked over this deal. I really was. And let me just quote a little bit of that. This was by Jeff Birnbaum in Washington Post. On Tuesday, I guess it was. Hopefully it was Tuesday. Anyway, it was this week. It said over 5.5 years, Republican and Democratic lawmakers accepted nearly $50 million in trips, often to resorts and exclusive locales from corporations and groups seeking legislative favors. What a nice way to put it, legislative favors, according to the most comprehensive study to date on the subject of congressional travel. From January 2000 to June 2005, House and Senate members and their aides were away from Washington for more than 81,000 days, a combined 222 years, on at least 23,000 trips, according to the report issued earlier this week by the Nonpartisan Center for Public Integrity. About 2,300 of the troops of the trips cost $5,000 or more, and at least 500 cost $10,000 or more, and 16 of them cost $25,000 or more. And the study went on to say, and I'm quoting here, while some of these trips might qualify as legitimate fact-finding missions, the purpose of others is less clear. Oh, how kind, less clear. In addition, the lawmakers' financial reports that disclose the details of the trips are routinely riddled with mistakes and omissions. Lawmakers and their staffers were treated to $25,000 corporate jet rides and $500 a night hotel rooms, the study shows. Lawmakers accepted thousands of costly jaunts, one worth more than $30,000, to some of the world's choicest destinations, at least 200 trips to Paris, 150 to Hawaii, and 140 to Italy. What's the big deal with having to study over in Hawaii right now with these congressmen? And it goes on to say, congressional travelers gave speeches in Scotland, attended meetings in Australia, and toured nuclear facilities in Spain. They pondered welfare reform in Scottsdale, Arizona, and the future of Social Security at a Colorado ski resort. Not a lot of people into the Social Security scene that need it anyway at a Colorado ski resort. I can assure you of that. And going on in the story, many congressional offices have voluntarily curtailed their privately funded travel since disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff pleaded guilty in January to conspiring to bribe. No. To bribe public officials, in part with lavish overseas trips, but lawmakers and their aides still may accept travel for official purposes from private interest without limit. Now, I really like this part right here. It just shows that these people are really conscientious and they're really trying hard. House Speaker J. Dennis Hastert, Republican from Illinois, proposed banning such travel soon after Abramoff's plea. But lawmakers of both parties and in both chambers of Congress quickly resisted imposing significant new restriction on the trips, which are a much-prized perk of office. No fooling. Representative John Boehner, he likes to be called Bonner, but I don't see where that I'm going to use Boehner. Republican from Ohio, and again, I'm not picking on either party. I'm not selective at all in this thing. He won election to the post of House Majority Leader this year by running on a platform that included opposing the travel ban. Boehner and members of his office were among the top beneficiaries of private-funded travel, according to the study, taking more than 200 trips during the 5.5-year period reviewed. Others include the office of Representative Joe Barton, Republican of Texas, Majority Whip Roy Blunt from Missouri, Republican, oh, I know this one, Michael Oxley from Ohio, Representative Gregory Meeks, Democrat from New York, and Republican Representative Robert Wexler, Democrat from just right across Alligator Alley here. Shame on you people. Shame on you. And Kevin Madden, I love the statements they make about these things, don't you? To rationalize to the American public why they're doing this. Kevin Madden, a spokesman for Boner, said yesterday that privately funded travel by members of Congress is fully disclosed and, quote, leads to greater understanding of the issues at no cost to the taxpayers. Oh, no cost to the taxpayers. You want to bet on that, Kevin Madden? You want to bet that that doesn't cost the taxpayers any money, ultimately? One of the largest corporate sponsors of lawmakers' travel was General Atomics, a relatively small San Diego-based defense contractor that makes the Predator, an unmanned spy plane now in wide use by the United States and other countries. The study reported that the company largely targeted congressional staff members spending roughly $660,000 on 86 trips for legislators, aides, and their spouses from 2000 to mid-2005. Some of the trips were valued at more than $25,000. Why am I going on about this? What are they saying here? Why not just say it like it is? Why don't these people that spend the money for the trip say, I am buying your vote. I am purchasing your vote. Let's tell it like it is. General Atomics' spending on congressional travel was far more than any other large company by far. And here's the kicker. On trips paid for by General Atomics to Turkey and Australia, congressional staffers attended meetings. Our congressional staffers attended taxpayer money. This doesn't cost the taxpayers anything. These people are getting paid not to travel necessarily, but getting paid by the taxpayers for their salaries. They attended meetings with foreign government officials that the company was soliciting to buy the Predator. In other words, they're using congressional staffers paid for, their salaries paid for by the American public. They're using them as shills. They're using them as used car salesmen in other countries to play up how great these Predator drones are to help them sell them. They're flying them over there. We're paying the tab on their salaries. And they're flying them over there to sell these Predators to other countries. How do you like that, huh? How does that make you feel? I sound like a psychiatrist now, doesn't it? How does that make you feel? Sit down here on my couch. How do you feel about that? He goes on to say, well, the guy, the head of the company, went on to say it's useful. I bet it is, and very helpful. In fact, when you go down and talk to the government officials, to have congressional people go along and discuss the capabilities of the plane with them. Well, shut my mouth. I would never have guessed that, would you? The center's study illustrates how widespread this practice has become for both Democrats, and I hate that far more than saying that Republicans are involved too. Believe me, it bothers me to tell you that Democrats were doing this as well. Republicans, I would expect that. From my Democratic friends, I would not expect that. I would demand that my Democratic representative not be involved in that kind of crap. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have a Democratic representative, but if I did, I would demand it. Of the 25 individual lawmakers who accepted more than $120,000 worth of travel during the period, 17 of them were Democrats. 17 were Democrats, and of the two dozen congressional offices on which private trip sponsors spent the most money, 15 were Republicans, the study said. At least 150 of the disclosure forms scrutinized by the center did not list a sponsor. Oh, I wonder why not. Just happened to leave that out. Just didn't want Joe Public to know who had paid for your lavish trip overseas. It's just an oversight. And after the center contacted her, one of my very favorite people, Catherine Harris of Florida, a candidate for the United States Senate, amended amended her 2003 form to fill in the name of the group that paid for her two-day visit in November to the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Now, if there's anybody, well, not anybody, she's not the richest, but her pockets are lined with gold. She needs somebody to pay for a couple of nights stay for her over at the Breakers and Palm Beach Hotel. I can tell you, that joint, it's not your Motel 6. I can tell you that. You can stay a year in a Motel 6 for what it costs to stay there one night. Might be a little off on that. But she amended this whole thing, and the Center for the Study of Popular Culture, spokesman for the Harris said the omission of forgetting to mention, I mean, just a slight omission, it was a staff error. One of her staff made, I mean, of course, I mean, she would not try and hide something like that. I know Catherine better than that, and she's an honest and forthright woman. By the way, her second campaign manager's just quit. But anyway, this woman is going to spend these millions on her own campaign. She's on the dole for the Breakers in Palm Beach, Florida, by a company. And we are always fair in this program. After he was contacted by the Center for Public Integrity, just the good old boy you see on TV all the time, Representative Charlie Rangel, Democrat from New York. You know, the guy that always talks like this. He reimbursed the Cuban government and this grocery store owner, I don't know what that's about, $1,922 for expenses incurred by his son Stephen during a trip that Rangel, his wife, and his son took to Cuba to study the ecology there in 2002. I didn't know Charlie was an ecologist, did you? Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. House rules permit sponsors of lawmakers' trips to cover the cost of only one accompanying relative. You know, that's one too many. Rangel's spokesman said the office had not been aware of the rule. How long's Charlie been in Congress and he wasn't aware of this rule? The House, by the way, as long as we're keeping track here, had more frequent flyers than the Senate did during the period. The 10 congressional offices that accepted more than 200 privately sponsored trips, each were all in the House, as were 11 offices that had travel expenses exceeding $350,000 each. The 10 most expensive trips were taken by members of the House, or in one instance, a House aide. Well, you know, they all try and justify this in some way, shape, or form, and you got to hand it to this guy, this Tom White. He's a spokesman for the Association of American Railroads, who has been paying for some of these little trips for our congressman. And he said, and you just got to love him for saying this. He said, and I quote, "If you try to talk to a member for any great length of time about your issues while they're in Washington, they're simply too busy." So, you know, end quote. So I understand now. I didn't get it before. Of course you can't talk to them in Washington. They're too busy talking to the other lobbyists so that trying to buy their votes. So if you want to really get their ear, send them on a little trip someplace where you can talk to them privately. Take them on the company jet. Take them to Hawaii. Take them to Tom DeLay. In Tom DeLay's case, take them to the Marianas Islands. You know, just take them someplace nice and private where you two can just have a chat. Just a nice little chat. Nothing, you know, I don't want anything from you, Congressman. Of course, I would never, never, please, I would never want anything from you. Of course not. I just want to show my good faith and my support and give you and your wife and a couple of your kids a nice little trip to Bali or someplace like, where we can discuss issues, you know. Folks, it gets crazier and crazier, doesn't it? What would the founders, the beloved founders that so many of these people that walk around the halls of Congress, quoting the beloved founders, and you go through the hall there in the nation's capital and see the statues of all these great men that founded this country. And you stand there and you look at that, you look at those men, think, what would they have thought of the people upstairs right now in the House of Representatives? What would they have thought of the people in the United States Senate right now? Oh, to be sure, there's some good people in both. There are. There's some good people. But what would they have thought? What would the founders of this great country have thought of the overall ethics, the ethically challenged Senate and House? What would your John Adams, your Ben Franklin, your Thomas Jefferson, your George Washington, what would these men think of these crooks? You took what? From who? Don't you know that's got the appearance of selling your votes? Don't you understand that? Well, no, not really. I didn't let it affect me. I went on this little trip to Hawaii with my wife and kids and everything, and yes, I talked to these people. I talked to them on their private jet on the way over there, and we had a little discussion on the way back. And while we were there, we met every afternoon over a few drinks bound by the pool. But no, I'm not beholden to them at all. Or we went to Las Vegas, and you know, they were shoveling money to me down at the roulette wheel, and I was leaving. But I, you know, I don't look at that like I owe them anything back. Of course not. I have more scruples than that. What a shame. What a shame. I would be so embarrassed. But most of these people are far beyond that. I guess we know that by now. Far beyond that. There is no shame in Washington. There really is no shame. I was going to go into this big talk about Tommy DeLay, and it'll have to wait till Monday. We'll do that when we're in Washington. Can't let Tommy DeLay pass without saying something about his little act yesterday on the House floor. Bastard. Boy, oh boy. I do want to mention very quickly that good old Louisiana, Governor Kathleen Blanco, a, quote, Democrat, says she will sign the state's abortion ban, which was recently passed by both the House and the Senate. Get out the coat hangers in Louisiana. Blanco says she believes an exception for rape, and this is the part of this that I really, really like right here. It shows me what kind of a principled individual that Kathleen Blanco really is. Besides being an incompetent governor, she really has principles. She says she believes an exception for rape and incest victims to get an abortion, a proposal rejected by both the House and the Senate, just like, what was it, North Dakota? There's no exception for rape and incest victims. She said that would have been reasonable, but she wouldn't reject the bill for that reason. That is why it's unreasonable for pro-choicers to support politicians just because they're nominally Democrats. When we elect people like Blanco to win back the South, we really lose. Here's a Democrat, a quote, and I keep that in quotations, Democrat Kathleen Blanco. Actually, Mary Landrieu's in the same boat, not on this abortion issue, I don't know on that. But as far as pretending to be a Democrat, and don't give me that crap about, oh, where they live, they've got to be this way. Hey, either be what you is or don't be what you is. Don't tell me you is a Democrat when you is not, okay? I don't care where you live. Don't pull that crap with me. I don't want to hear it. Here's a Democrat, Kathleen Blanco, that without taking along David Duke Republicans in the 2003 election, wouldn't even be the governor of Louisiana. Did you know that? David Duke Republicans? They were on the side of Kathleen Blanco? Would David Duke Republicans be on the side of an actual Democrat? Oh my God! Will the filth never end? I know, some of you don't like my opinions on that. Some of you don't like it, and you've said so, and will respectfully disagree. And I mean respectfully disagree. And as good Democrats, we can disagree on that issue. And I know there's not agreement on that issue. I believe in purity in the party. And a lot of people, and I would not allow somebody like a Kathleen Blanco, would not allow Joe Lieberman, not allow, it's not up to me to allow, I'm not the king of the world. But I don't want these people in the party. I do not want them. I do not want Bill Nelson on the floor. I do not want Ben Nelson. I don't want these people in the party. I want purity in the party. But I respect your opinion, you folks on the other side. Hey, we need these people to get a majority. I understand that argument. I do understand that argument. But I'm just stubborn enough that I can't give in on that. I can't. I hear you. Oh, I hear you all right. And you've got a perfectly logical argument. And we can sit and debate that, and boy, wouldn't I love to. Starting right after the show, we'll just get down to the local watering hole and sit there and have me a great big orange drink. And you can have what you like, and we'll talk about it. That's the good thing about a bunch of Democrats. We can get together and fight and argue and walk away as friends. And speaking of friends, thank you for listening to the program today. It's been a good show. It's been kind of a quiet Friday. But I know many of you are listening. I see the emails up there right now, and I see the numbers on the graph over here as well. So thank you. Thank you, friends. Thank you for being with us on the Guy James Show. And remember, always remember, you've heard from the radical right, but now all that's left is the truth. Have a great weekend. I intend to.